Well, I should start by apologizing for the irregularity of the podcast of late. I had this idea that having the summer off would mean that I would be uniquely free in a way that I haven't been since high school. And this summer has been like somehow has managed to be the busiest time of my whole life. So we, and when I say we, I mean I, am going to do my best to get this back to being kind of a Sunday, Monday sort of thing. Please don't stop listening, even though it sucks and is inconsistent. We'll try to make it so it just sucks, but sucks consistently. That is my goal. A bit has happened since we've been away. I want to start with local news. Lots of cool stuff.
Yeah. So I guess probably the iCup was super cool at Soldier Hollow. So I pre-rode the iCup. It was just like, there was like 3 inches of powdered sugar dust on the trail. It was just awful. I actually did go get a wax chain after that pre-ride.
You went and bought one?
I went and bought one from Contender.
You just bought the Contender one? More and more, I'm sympathetic to. At first, I saw that I was like, that's dumb. Wax your own chain. And more, I'm like, I'm just going to start buying these because it is a bit of a pain. Yeah. It's one of those things where it's like, it is a pain, but it is worth it. Like this time of year, man, it is worth it.
Yeah, I pre-rode. I decided, yeah, you know, I probably won't race it. I'll just do a ride after. And I kind of thought that people were going to go there and just not have fun and just have a miserable day. But it turned out being an awesome day. It was so cool. Like, I mean, probably the most exciting performance. Well, one thing I thought was super cool is I remember when we used to go to the iCups and you'd see like Alex Grant or, what was the Badger, Honey Badger's name again? Justin Lindeen. Mm-hmm. And those guys like winning these iCups and just thinking that was just like, just
they
so
were gods.
They were,
you know,
were
are.
Yeah. And it was super cool because like at this race, we had Zoe Leclerc just battling it out with Sarah Kaufman. And it kind of came right down to the last little bit. Zoe finally got her, you know, and it was just so cool watching like Hunter Cottam racing like the Bender brothers and just some, you know, just like a pretty awesome stat group, but like people in Maybird kits winning elite iCups just kind of blows me away a little bit.
Yeah, dude.
You know, it was kind of cool because they were racing some of the, I don't want to say old timers, but like just racing some of the just kind of local pros for lack of a better term. And it was just super cool.
Old timer in cycling now means older than 25.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you've got like, we were at the USAC race up at Soldier Hall a couple of weeks ago. And like, I saw like one of like the little kiddie races and you've got these kids out here who are like 7 wearing an aero helmet. That's like too big for them. And like it's, I mean, just cool to see. I mean, you know, but yeah, it's wild to like watch someone who is wearing a kit that you and your brother designed in your basement and argued over like win an iCup. Like that's cool. Mm-hmm.
It's so
shout
cool.
out to those guys. That's baller.
It was just a really cool day. I mean, it was obviously hot. A lot of the like after the varsity race, a lot of those guys basically just went off to the side and kind of died. You know, just people, you could tell that like some people were more heat acclimated than other people. Heat adapted, I guess, is probably a more accurate term. But I would say the heroes of the day was definitely the Potter family.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Josh Potter and his parents, they actually own like a shaved ice stand in Tooele, and they brought their shaved ice equipment to the Maybird tent. And they were making these basically shaved ice for anyone that wanted one. And it was amazing how awesome that felt. And they ended up getting like everyone started coming over and like, can I have one? And they were like, they were making them for everyone. They didn't make them show any Maybird ID or anything like that, but they were just making them for everyone. And like people started like taking a can of Coke and pouring it over the shaved ice and stuff. And it was just, it was amazing. And they worked hard like the whole time. They were just busting out these shaved ices the whole time, which was just so awesome of them to do it.
If you don't know the Potters, Josh Potter, Josh is one of my boys. He, if you want to know who Josh Potter is, go to a race. There will be a guy on the start line that is the scariest looking bike racer you've ever. Like, if Josh, I think, is 15, I'm over 10 years older than Josh. If Josh pulled up next to me at a bike race, I think I'd excuse myself. He is like the most, he's like the nicest kid I've ever met. He is intimidating. When he races a bike, it's like watching a train ride a bike. It's wild. Like he's a strong kid. Dude. Yeah. He also has that kind of indomitable human spirit thing. Like, I kind of get to the point with our training rides where I was like trying to think of stuff to stump him, and it's hard. He's willing to go into the pain cave. Huge shout out to the Potter family.
Yeah, that was just
Tooele too. That's
awesome. Yeah, and that was a lot of hard work. So thanks for them for doing that.
If we're or any more iCup stuff, because there's,
I think that's it on iCup.
Calvin Christensen, second place at Marathon Nationals. Yeah, holy freaking!
That
smokes,
is super
dude.
Cool.
That's like a lifetime. Like, you can tell your grandkids that you were like the second in the country at your sport is wild. Like, that is so freaking cool, dude. Seeing the Maybird, you know, kit on that podium too. Like, it's, you know, it's like we talk about how it's kind of sad when parents live vicariously through their children. An even lamer version of that is when you're vicariously living through people who are like on your team. But I'm going to take that.
I do it all the time.
I'll take it.
No, that was super proud of Calvin. He works hard. He does all the things right. Way to go. Super cool results. So, Crusher happened.
Crusher did happen. Yes. I do want to shout out Zach Calton, won Crusher in the Elite Men's. Very well deserved. He's going to be, you know, like my kids will look at Zach Calton the same way I think that I looked at like Alex Grant. You know, he's one of the greatest riders to come out of Utah. Mm-hmm. And his ride was just insane. Like, you know, he came in like I kind of figured he was going to win, but like watching the clips from the race, I was like, that's some class bike racing. Wanted to shout that out. That was super cool.
Yeah. We had quite a few Maybird riders doing it. I know we had like, Jamerson, Miles and Braden McNichols all did it. We had a couple, well, we had Riker do it, but I guess he,
Riker missed his start and then just kind of
just rode it.
Just time trialed Crusher, I guess, which is cool.
He got a great time.
Yeah.
Yeah. He slept in and started kind of late, which means he probably did it during more heat than most people had to, which would be ouch.
I want to throw out, for what it's worth, like, that's cool to still go do it.
Oh, for sure.
Have you had the nightmare where you missed the race start?
No.
I think a lot of bike races have had, or like a lot of people, like a lot of, like, this is like a, you know, like where you have, it's like, I'm always at a Nike race and I'm always watching the race start while I'm sitting in the tent because I got like the time wrong. And then I'm like scrambling, trying to find my helmet. It's not under any of the chairs. I'm trying to, you know, like, I think if I missed a race start, I'd probably just be like, dang, peace, and then like go home. But like to go out and like still do that is cool.
Yeah, super cool. We also had a couple of our coaches do it. Bo Foreman did it, and Amy Larkin did it as well, which is just a super cool example.
Our uncle, who does not listen to this, as far as I know,
if he wears a Maybird kit.
He did wear a Maybird kit. John Clayton, Dr. Clayton, very well done there. Crusher's crazy, man. Like if you've done point to point a few times and you want a different challenge, Crusher's a cool one to do. And I think Crusher's cool too, because it draws on a different skill set you might not be used to if you're a mountain biker. Crusher is kind of like the graveliest of gravel races, but like super challenging climbing. It demands some really interesting things from the tech side. I want to have Isaac Boyden on again soon. He had a great ride too. I want to have Isaac on because he was telling me about his Crusher setup, and it is kind of the hardest race to set up a bike for. So if you haven't done, like, Crusher's a really cool, really hard, it fits into that kind of pantheon of Crusher, Leadville, point to point, like the, you know, Unbound. It's kind of like all of these, like the big, big, you know, like
hairy
race, the big hairy races here in, here in the US. You should add that one to your list.
Yeah. I know Amy actually rode it on a mountain bike. She has a gravel bike, but she chose to ride it on a mountain bike, and she said she didn't regret it. So I think,
look at the tires the pros are riding. Let's throw that out there.
They look like mountain bike tires.
The pros are finding that for most of the actual gravel racing, which we don't actually really get here in Utah for the most part, like I don't think like just civilians need to be riding around on like mountain bike tires on the gravel bikes, but that's what the pros are on. You know, like watch Unbound this year, you know, watch Unbound this year, watch Crusher, wide tires there. Huge shout out to that as well. I feel like we're missing stuff.
So Nationals is coming up and we've got a few riders headed that way. I know like Ainsley and Emma and Hunter and Calvin, and there's probably others. I just can't, sorry if I forget anyone that's headed out there, but good luck to all our national racers.
We have more racers this year going to the Tahoe race.
Yeah. Just we're
geographically closer.
Yeah. Like, for me to really support a race, I have to drive there. I can't fly and support a race, you know, and for me to drive to Virginia is just not,
it's a big undertaking. And then the problem is we really kind of followed demand on the team. Like I'm sure if 30 people on the team wanted to be in Virginia, you're going to be there. But like there generally is more demand, I think, because with families too, it's just, it's hard to travel, to fly a whole family. It's just like that stacks up pretty quick. I will say, like, you should do a Nationals at some point if you can. I really think they're doing too many Nationals back east, man.
Yeah,
when
they get closer, we'll for sure go to them.
I get it. I know that this is not, like, a Western U.S. sport. But, dude, like, most of the people doing this are in the Western U.S. The better riding's in the Western U.S. I'm a little, like...
I was a little upset that they had it back east again. So I was kind of protesting a little bit. So I asked a lot of our top riders if they'd be interested in doing like an endurance type race instead, and they were interested. So we've got a great group going to do the Tahoe Trail 100.
Super cool event.
Which is a really cool event. It's also a Leadville qualifier, and a lot of these riders have Leadville in their sights.
Yeah.
So I think it's going to be a lot of fun. We'll let you know how it goes. I'm excited.
Yeah.
To go out there. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. And it actually just kind of seems like a little less pressure. It's just going to, like, I'm not having to bring all this equipment and tents and stuff. I'm just showing up and riding. And so I'm kind of excited myself for it. One thing I did, we talked about Zoe LeClaire a second ago. She's so much fun to ride with. I love riding with Zoe. She just makes rides really fun. A little crazy.
She's a firecracker, man.
After she won her Elite I Cup, she and Solomon rode up over Pine Canyon and rode home after in the blazing heat. And
that is a choice.
Yeah.
That is an interesting use of free will.
And I tried to tell her not, I'm like, Zoe, there's no good training reason for doing that. She's like, I know, I just want to, it sounds fun. I'm kind of
baller. Okay. That's all pretty right. Cool to like win the biggest race you could do at the highest level you could do it on a given day. And then just to be like, oh, whatever. Like, I don't have that kind of talent. As if anyone needed a reminding.
Joe, you've gotten really, since Joe's been off for the summer, he's gotten pretty fast.
Expectations nice and low. We'll see if that lasts. Tess is going to be in Canada for the next little bit. So other than
he's going to overtrain soon, which is good. That'll slow him down.
I know what our topic's about today, and I have questions about this because I'm kind of like, wow, for the amount I'm doing, I'm really feeling it. Not to segue you too quickly. Before I segue you there, other local news, I do want to talk about the tour.
Yeah, I feel like I'm forgetting something, but
weekly disclaimer. If we missed the cool thing you did, let us know. Tour de France, biggest thing in our sport. We should talk about it really quick. I'm gonna keep this fast. First off, the Tour de France is on Peacock for $7. Do it. Cancel your subscription. There's nothing else good on Peacock. Cancel it after. That's like NBC's stupid streaming thing or whatever. We live in hell. but like $7. $7. You can watch the tour. For the record, I am pretty confident I can get more out of a road race than probably anybody listening to this. I do not watch the full stages. I just don't. That is the fundamental problem with cycling. It is not... In some ways, it's the most spectator-friendly sport in the world, and in other ways, it's like watching... It would be like watching a six-hour ping-pong match where they only, like, you know, the ball moves at, like...
They're just volleying.
Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting if you kind of know what's going on, but, like, watching the last kind of half hour of every stage is interesting. I will say, this year's tour so far, they're not into the big mountains yet, has been a little boring. Tadej Pogačar is comfortably better than the rest. His only like real rival is Jonas Vingegaard, and he lost a minute to Pogačar in a time trial. So unless Jonas really pulls out something generationally insane in the mountains, I think, and assuming Pogačar doesn't crash or get sick, obviously, right? I think it's probably going to be Pogačar. But there have been some cool things, and I want to shout out a rider named Ben Healy from Ireland on EF, which is one of the, like, you know, EF is really like an advertising thing more than a team. Like, they're not, they didn't go to the tour to win. Funny enough, when Ben Healy rode into the yellow jersey, they didn't have a yellow bike for him. So someone drove in a Porsche convertible, by the way, which is just like so cool, from some Cannondale warehouse somewhere where they had a yellow Super 6 frame or painted a yellow Super 6 frame, drove to where they are in France and had it built up overnight so he would have a yellow bike for the next day. Like, Pogačar's team showed up with yellow bikes, right? They're planning on winning. Remco has a yellow, like, helmet ready to go in case he goes into the yellow jersey. Van der Poel for sure had the yellow Canyon, right? Ben Healy is a breakaway specialist. He is just like, his thing is like, I'm going to go into the race, roll the dice 9 times out of 10, I'm going to lose. 1 time out of 10, I win a big race. And he got third on the last stage before today, because it was rest day, got third, but actually took the yellow jersey off Pogačar.
Oh boy.
His team let him go. He's not going to win. He can't win the tour. Like, he can't hang with Pogačar in the high mountains. So they let him go, but they did peel the yellow jersey off Pogačar. So, it's cool to see, because he's a classy rider. His team actually today, Pogačar actually had a crash today. Another rider crashed out Pogačar, and, far enough out that, like, they could have pushed the pace, like, within the rules. And EF and a couple other teams said, no, like, we don't want to, that's not cool. We're not going to push the pace because he crashed. Like, just very classy. It's cool to see kind of an underdog win. There have been some other cool things, to be totally honest with you. It's been fairly textbook. Not a lot of crazy narratives or anything. Fortunately, not a lot of, like, really terrible, unusually bad crashes yet. Kind of like the normal number. Any crashes, it's too many. But it's been a pretty textbook, relatively boring tour. At my last check, I'm third place in the fantasy, which is exciting. I'm realizing I had it pulled up. I don't know if I have it anymore. If you haven't joined the fantasy, I think it's too late. I will shout out... I'll shout out myself, because I'm in third, and that's pretty darn good. Currently, the Maybird League is being led by Carter, followed by Pinkie Pie, followed by me. I am beating Kyson right now. Kyson, the sound you just heard is me throwing down the gauntlet. You'd better catch me. Kyson's at 5,500 points. I am at just about 57. So I also did predict today's stage winner from Uno X, which is my new favorite team. So,
okay, good.
Good stuff. Tour's cool. I don't think we have other stuff. Do we have other stuff?
I don't think so.
So, I have been riding a little more, not as much as I'd like. Nobody ever rides as much as they really want to, but, I was actually saying a couple of weeks ago, I haven't been riding an insane amount and my legs hurt pretty bad all the time. This is your beautiful segue, and I'm hoping that you hop on it soon. So,
okay. Segue accepted.
Oh my gosh. Wow. What a pro.
Yeah. Today's topic is sore legs. A while ago, I actually had like a year or so ago, McCall asked me why her legs were sore all the time or something.
And timely response on this, huh?
Yeah. And so it's an episode I've been wanting to do for a while, but I haven't really, I don't know. We did kind of an episode on fatigue a while ago, and it's related, but this one's definitely going to be different. So, because, I mean, obviously it deals with fatigue, but there's some other things too that could cause your legs to feel heavy or tired or sore or whatever. And we're just going to talk about all those. So
my legs have felt perpetually sore and tired for a little over 10 years now. And I'm not exaggerating when I say that. Like, I have been very fortunate to avoid illness and injury, like long, big illness and injury in the, you know, decade plus that I've been doing this. The longest break I've taken off the bike was when I got married and went on my honeymoon in Europe. It was about a 2-week span where I didn't really ride, but I was walking 20,000 steps a day. So, like, I really do mean it when I say that my legs hurting has just sort of been a thing since I was in 10th grade.
Mm-hmm.
I was kind of debating doing a bit where I pretend to be like your like high school track coach who's like, oh, you got the lactic acid in your leg. Maybe kind of do some of the like the sort of like the, here's how maybe a random civilian in the public would understand sore legs. I don't know if that is going to get old really fast, so I'm not going to do it.
But we are going to address the common misconceptions, and you know, and there's multiple reasons why your legs aren't feeling ideal, and some are just kind of temporary with quick fixes and others require some more recovery, and it just kind of depends. And you know, you say your legs are constantly tired, it might be several different reasons throughout the years that they feel that way, you know. So we're just going to kind of go through all those. And you know, like I said, a lot of it's related to fatigue, but there's other things too. So but let's just first talk about fatigue, because we did a whole podcast on fatigue, and fatigue's interesting because we really don't know exactly what causes fatigue. You know, we know several things that may or may not, but it's something we don't completely understand.
Really?
Yeah. And
like, we don't understand how the Egyptians built the pyramids, and this is a History Channel documentary we don't understand? Or like, because you hear like lactic acid, or like, I remember a high school health teacher explaining that like your muscles tear and then they rebuild themselves, and that's what makes your muscles
tear. We're talking
bigger.
About all these things today.
Okay, this is interesting. I'm just way too good at my job.
So Damien Ruse of Semi Pro Cyclist, I don't know if you've heard of him before.
Oh, of course I have.
Yeah. He said something a while ago, and I thought it was so cool I wrote it down. But here's his quote. Fatigue is a negotiation between you and your... Let me start over.
I love not all... It's that was just a sandwich of awesomeness where you think this really lame quote, like you're getting like chills reading it, and you can't stick the landing on it.
I read
that
it wrong.
Perfect.
Okay.
I know.
Sorry, I was like, no, okay, I'll actually look at my notes. Okay. Fatigue is a negotiation between your body and your brain.
Do you want me to clap? Like, what is, okay, that's a great quote, Dan.
So no, and I think that's kind of what we're learning more about fatigue is it's because there's kind of this debate whether it's like central or peripheral or, and I like how he put it. It's like a negotiation between your body and your brain. And he goes on to say, our brains are constantly scanning for threats. And so it's just kind of like this feedback loop where we've got our brain that's kind of looking for things that could be wrong or out of place or out of balance or whatever. And it will send feedback to that component of our body. And it's just kind of like, so basically it's kind of a combination.
This makes sense. Right. Like there's like a mechanism in your body to shut you down. Basically.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? This makes sense. Cause if you're running away, you it's not good for you for survival reasons to just be able to run until your body runs out of energy and your heart stops pumping, that there should be things to stop you ideally before the, like your body shuts down and you pass away phase.
Exactly.
Okay.
And we've talked before about our check engine light, you know, like you have a check engine light on the car, and like a lot of times when your check engine light goes off, it's something kind of dumb, like your O2 sensor or a loose gas cap or something that, you know, if that light didn't go off, you probably
wouldn't have noticed and maybe would have been fine versus
other times. You know, like you put a piece of electrical tape over the light and just ignore it and go on, you know.
Other times you've got like a family of possums living in the cylinders of your engine and that's a real problem. I don't know. Would that actually set off your light?
I don't
Mechanics
know.
Respond below.
Well, but one time I was driving home from work and all of a sudden my check engine light starts blinking.
Oh,
and I was on the freeway. I was like getting onto the 201 and the spaghetti bowl, and like my check engine light starts actually blinking. And I'm like, And next thing you know, my truck shut off, and I coasted to the side of the road. And that was that time the check engine light was a little more
built tough,
a little more severe.
It flashed at you.
Yeah. So, yes. And, you know, we've kind of got that a similar system built in us. You know, we've got like he said, our brain is scanning for threats,
Right.
And there's a way to kind of shut us down so we don't do damage.
Makes sense.
You know, but then sometimes that check engine light comes on a little bit early and we can push it past that a little bit, but maybe pushing too much is a bad thing, you know?
And this is because, like, Nika coaches will know that it's hard to get kids to learn that you can push a little bit when your check engine light goes on. It's okay to hurt. I remember you saying one time about a particular kid maybe to a parent or something that, like, they've got plenty of talent. They just don't know how to hurt yet. And they stop anytime it hurts at all. The listeners of this podcast on this team probably err more on the side of, like, they could kind of push themselves pretty close to dying. And we need to be like, hey, don't do that. Yeah. Drop it. You know, like the advice I love, you said one time, Ryder Jordan, who's on the team a while ago, and his dad is a kind of another one of the local legends. You said that when he was racing, instead of yelling like, go, go, his dad was yelling, be patient. Mm-hmm. That's sort of the, you know, so like, I think there's probably the bias we have on this podcast for these listeners is like people who are prone to ignore their check engine light and just keep stamping on the gas until something really bad happens. Right.
Mm, exactly. So in regards to fatigue, there's, so Damien Roos puts it into like three components, and really fatigue is kind of a combination of these three. And the first one's central, which we talked about. That's kind of like your check engine light that's scanning for threats. And then there's peripheral, which is like actual muscle damage or acidosis or inflammation. And there's also metabolic, which is related to like our energy balance and the fuel availability and so forth. So,
right.
So yeah, fatigue is probably going to be any combination of those three things. But then the other aspect of it is the fatigue acute or is it chronic?
Okay.
Which is super important. And obviously acute, something that's kind of like short term, deal with it, get over it. And chronic is something that you're dealing with over an extended period of time.
Like acute is dude off the street goes on his yearly 24th of July hike up Bell's Canyon and he's sore for a couple days after. If I were just to push pause on like Hunter and Zoe, like just right now, whatever they're doing, their legs are also probably going to hurt for a few days just because they do this a lot. They've got like that chronic fatigue built up, right? Where like random dude off the street at any given point in his life, his legs aren't going to be notably sore, right?
Well, hopefully Zoe and Hunter's legs occasionally feel good. You know, and like what you described sounds a little chronic and maybe we should be a little concerned. Okay. But yeah, so
my insurance covers therapy again, so I'll be hopefully doing something about that.
So we're going to talk about some just like if your legs are feeling sore, tired, heavy, whatever, we're going to talk about some of the possible reasons. And the kind of funny conclusion that I came to as I was getting ready for this is riding our bikes, it's the prevention, the cause, and the cure of sore legs. So
what's like that thing that like the dumbest person you follow on Instagram post where it's like they invent the sickness to sell you the cure or whatever. And it's just like a mountain bike, like that one uncle you can't talk to anymore. Like it's like that, but it's like a specialized epic. No, I mean, yeah, like that's, yeah. I've noticed too, funny enough, that like when I started picking up skiing a couple of years ago, that the soreness I felt after that was different than the soreness I just feel like as like a facet of a day in the life of Joe Draper, or that like I don't hike that much because bikes have been invented and some people forget that. But like when I do kind of go on a hike, I'm like, wow, that hurt my legs in a different kind of unusual way, you know?
Yeah. And that's kind of the first one we're going to talk to. I've got, let's see, six different possible reasons.
Oh boy. Lucky me.
And wait till you hear the last one.
Like, stick around for the last one. My cup runneth over. Okay.
Yeah.
Let's hit it.
And the first one's kind of what you're referring to with maybe with the skiing and so forth, where your legs are really sore after that. And the first one's kind of the one that most people go to. This is kind of what your gym teacher would tell you why your legs are sore. And that's DOMS. Which just stands for delayed onset muscle soreness. Mm-hmm. And this really isn't something we deal with bikes very much. It's something that you deal with like running and weightlifting and
okay.
and others in basketball, but not so much with cycling. So what DOMS is, you know, when it usually comes from like new eccentric contractions, which is like, if you're lifting weights, that's like you lowering the weight as opposed to lifting the weight.
Oh, okay.
Or if you're jumping, it's like jumping off a box rather than jumping onto the box.
So, which we really don't get in cycling.
You don't really get that in cycling at all.
Okay.
And when you do these types of movements that are new, your muscles develop a bunch of like micro tears, and the healing process after a couple days, you start to feel some of the inflammation taking place, and it doesn't happen right away. It happens like a day or two after, and that's DOMS. And like I say, this is something that runners, like if you're new to running, like the first time you go out running.
Oh yeah. My yearly first time I try running.
Yeah. You're going to get DOMS. If you're, especially if you're running down a hill, you know, like if you don't ever play basketball, you go play basketball.
You feel it for days.
You know, when you lift weights, when you're just starting, you'll experience this. And it's something that goes away once you get reasonably trained. So that's DOMS. Doesn't really apply to us. Your sore legs from riding your bike probably is not DOMS. So the second one is acidosis. So we've talked a lot recently about lactic acid, and hopefully by now we know that that's a myth.
Because that's another high school gym coach. Yo, you feel that lactic acid, right? Like, okay.
Yeah. But it's kind of like a technicality, more of a terminology thing, because when we exercise, our muscles do get acidic, but it's not lactic acid.
Like, so your coach isn't wrong. We're just pedantic dorks.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good to know.
Lactic acid,
I always suspected,
technically probably doesn't exist in the human body, but when we do
say it like it's a conspiracy. Big Lactic wants you to think. You actually can't even find it.
But when we do exercise intensely and we go above our threshold, our muscles do get acidic. But the thing is, this acidity it's something that the body monitors very, very closely, because this acidity, if we were allowed to experience this for a prolonged period of time, it basically cooks our muscles, like literally.
So you say acid, there's actually like measurable acid present in, because that's not good, right?
Yeah, yeah. Our muscles become acidic. Like, yeah, okay. Hydrogen ions will come in and change the pH of our muscles. And it's something that the body regulates so closely. So it's got really, really good systems for preventing this from damaging our muscles. And you know, and one of that systems is the check engine light. Like, your check engine light's going to start blinking if your muscles become acidic. And that effort that you're doing, it's only going to let you do it for a minute or two or three, you know. And the acidity, the body buffers it fairly quickly. So if you're sore 2 days after a ride, it's probably not acid. That's more of an acute thing that's going to happen when you're like going above threshold, doing like VO2 max intervals or sprints or something.
So this is sore on the drive home while you're eating dinner, laying in bed.
I would say like, during the effort, and once it clears, you start feeling better, like within minutes.
Oh,
you know, okay. Maybe an hour at most.
Okay.
If you are acidic for prolonged periods of times, it's more because of like an underlying medical condition.
Oh, which isn't
good either.
Really bad. Okay.
Yeah.
The human body is a carnival of horrors. Okay, carry on.
Yeah. You know, and how our body our body has like a buffering system, which involves bicarbonate, which is also why people supplement with bicarbonate and use that PR lotion on their legs and so forth.
We had an episode about this.
Yeah, we did.
That's cool.
Yeah. And it's good stuff. I like it. It actually works. It's a noticeable difference for me. And then you breathe out the carbon dioxide, you know, which is why when you're doing above threshold work, you start breathing heavily. You know, you're basically raising the pH in your
this, so when you have the baking soda volcano, mixed vinegar and baking soda, you get carbon dioxide coming off of that, right?
Yes.
Is this a thing?
I think so. I don't know.
Huh.
But
wow, glad they let me be an educator, huh? Cool. I was going to make a comparison, and then I realized I probably don't know enough to
sway my head on that. So the burning, and I kind of describe it as like a burning you feel. A lot of times I'll tell people, you know, like if I want them to do a kind of an easy ride and not go above threshold, if they don't have like a power meter or what, I tell them, just ride so your legs don't burn.
Okay.
You know, ride, if your legs are, if you kind of feel that burning sensation,
Back it off.
You're going a little too hard.
Okay.
Yeah. But again, that's just temporary. We usually clear it pretty quickly. Once the effort's done, we feel better. And so, yeah, so your prolonged sore legs probably aren't acid related.
Oh, thank goodness.
So the next one is I called it vascular insufficiency. And so it's pretty obvious how like our heart pumps blood out to our body. But how does that blood get back? There's not like
that's a good question, because I kind of imagine it being like a loop. But I guess, I don't. Do they take the bus? I don't know.
You know, in a way, it kind of is like a loop. There's kind of like a pressure gradient that kind of sends it back up to the heart, but the what actually helps get the blood back to our heart is a few things. And one is our muscles help pump the blood back to our heart.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And then the second thing is our veins are designed to have like one-way valves so that the blood can flow back towards the heart, but shouldn't go back towards our legs, if that makes sense. And so muscle contraction is what helps pump blood back towards our heart. And some people kind of refer to, and especially the calf muscles. Some people have referred to the calf muscles as like our second heart that kind of pumps blood back.
I say helps. Some people, like who? Never heard this before. I feel like that's a thing you wanted to say, and then you're like trying to like add a veneer of credibility by saying, well, some people are saying it, not me.
They say,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, so movement helps pump blood back towards our heart.
Okay.
Yeah. And so a lot of times, like, you know, blood can kind of be pulling in your legs, and your legs can feel really, really heavy. And that's kind of like an unpleasant feeling, because it puts pressure on the muscles, and our muscles are really sensitive to pressure.
This is what I'm feeling when I like get out of, like, drive to St. George, and you get out of the car, and like you try to do a ride right away after like being in the car for a while, and like that feeling, is that what you're describing?
Yeah, or like I think of like when you're just standing on your feet all day.
Oh yeah, no, I know that feeling too.
Yeah, because that blood's it has to overcome gravity to get back
up. Just gonna float back up.
You know, so that's just kind of like why your legs will feel really, really heavy sometimes, and the thing is like
Normatex are for.
Yeah, we'll get into that.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah.
Segue came in too fast.
That's exactly what Normatex are for. Basically, Normatex.
I bought those and I don't actually know what they're for. I'm such an idiot. Okay.
Yeah, they help kind of overcome gravity a little bit. And, because if you've got a lot of blood pulling in your legs, it's unpleasant and your legs feel heavy and you kind of almost feel like you're not going to be able to ride your bike very well. But the thing is like moving your legs is going to help pump that blood back to your heart, because you really don't want that blood just pulling down there. You want it like sent back up to your lungs to get oxygenated and then sent back to your body, you know. And so that's that. Yeah. And like for some people, like there's like a lot of chronic diseases and so forth that could make that be a more chronic problem for people. You know, like being overweight or having, you know, having like high blood pressure or so forth could affect that. But for us, sometimes you just need to move your legs, lift up your legs.
Spin off.
Yeah.
Cause I've told people before that, like, and I was kind of going to ask that, like, sometimes I get on the bike and even like, you know, if I take 2 or 3 days off or whatever, you're back on the bike and my legs don't feel good. I kind of have a rule where like, I don't give up on the ride or the workout until I'm like an hour in. I mean, like, I'll just keep riding easy to moderate until, so like I'm looking to do intensity work. Like usually I only need 10 or 15 minutes to get into it. Sometimes at 30 minutes, I'm like, wow, my legs feel like garbage and 200 watts feels like I'm, you know, like lifting 1,000 pounds. Right. But then by the end of the ride, I kind of feel fine. You know, or I'm like, whoa, when I started this ride, I felt like garbage, but it's 3 hours in and I feel great now. Is that maybe what I'm experiencing there? Just like cycling?
Oh yeah, exactly. And that's, okay. You know, if this, and we'll talk about this more in a second, but if this is your issue, riding for 15 minutes is going to get that blood recirculated and you should feel better after a few minutes, you know, which is why you really never know how good your ride's going to be by how you feel right before you start.
Or how you feel like right after you start either. Like I said, sometimes it takes me 30 plus minutes to kind of be like, oh, okay, I feel better now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And this could be the reason for that.
Okay.
So number four, and this one's a big one, is low glycogen.
Mm, okay.
Because we've talked about glycogen. It's basically how we store our carbohydrates, and they're stored locally. Like the glycogen in your legs, that's stored in your legs, is the glycogen that your legs use. You know, so if you're low on glycogen,
you feel it.
You feel it. Your legs are going to feel awful. And I've always said that, like, you know, if you ever have that unexpectedly bad day out of nowhere,
we just kind of can't really point a finger to why it would have been bad.
Yeah. Like, I honestly think low glycogen is a likely culprit.
Hmm.
You know, so yeah. One thing to point out here too is if this becomes more of a chronic and extended problem, you could also be like breaking down protein and breaking down muscle.
Oh,
you know, which is why we've talked so much about like Red S and the importance of fueling our workouts and so forth, because that's something we don't want to do.
We're not into dieting or keto or any of that other stuff. Yeah, we don't want to. Athletes here, we're not gonna. Never hear us advocating.
It's just like damage to your body that's not ultimately going to make you faster. So that's why we've stressed staying fueled when you ride, maintaining an energy balance. You know, not.
This is your millionth reminder that when you see that article on Velo News or whatever about how whatever pro cyclist did whatever crazy thing to get to race weight, they're doing that with a team of like five doctors and they're walking a ridiculously tight line to like get down to race weight without losing any muscle, right? That it's like, don't just do other stuff. Do other stuff to get faster, not that.
So another thing I just want to kind of throw out here when we're talking about like protein breaking down and so forth is like, if you combine muscle damage with dehydration, you could possibly get a condition called rhabdomyolysis, and you've heard of this, right?
Rhabdo, yeah.
Yeah. And what's happening here is the myoglobin from the damaged muscles, it enters the bloodstreams, goes to the kidneys, and it basically causes kidney failure. And the telltale sign of this is super, super dark urine. And rhabdo is fairly rare. It's difficult to do.
We've had a Maybird rider have it before.
Yeah, shout out to Drew Derrick here.
Huge HIPAA. Actually, it's not HIPAA because we're not his healthcare provider. So there you go, Drew. No, this is why it's like I saw a thing where it's like, if your pee is really dark yellow, you're like, oh shoot, I gotta drink some water. If your pee is like brown, it's like, oh shoot, I gotta go to the hospital. Like it's like really bad, right?
Okay. Yeah, it's really bad. So low glycogen could possibly be why your legs are sore. The next one, number five, is probably the most important one to talk about, and that's inflammation.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
Isn't that kind of like saying, why do my legs hurt? Because they do. Like, why are my legs inflamed, I guess would be the question.
Yeah. And is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing?
Right.
Depends on context.
Yeah, great way to make your legs never sore is to never use them. Yeah. Right?
So most of your rides, kind of your bread and butter rides, you really shouldn't feel anything too unusual the next day. But, you know, you're just like, most of the training we do, we're just kind of accumulating time. We're just putting miles in a bank, basically. But occasionally, we need to do like our breakthrough workouts. And that's the workout. Those are the workouts where you know, you find your limits, you push them, you push beyond your limits a little bit. If you're doing those types of workouts, you should expect to feel something the next day. And basically what you should be feeling is, you know, you've done a little bit of damage to your muscles because you kind of pushed beyond your limits. And hopefully you've done enough that it sends a signal that causes inflammatory response to come repair the damage. And what happens here is the blood flow to the area is increased, you know, so that area is going to feel a little bit heavier. It's going to allow more fluids to accumulate in the area as part of that response, which is going to be maybe a little bit of swelling sometimes. And our muscles are really sensitive to that increased pressure from, you know, from the swelling and from the increased blood flow and so forth. But this immune response that we get, as we've talked about this before, is actually what signals the adaptations, because it signals our immune system to come in and repair the damage that we've caused. And when we repair the damage, our body always repairs above and beyond where it started, just because it wants us to be capable to handle that next time it's presented.
This is the fundamental principle underlying athletic training.
Exactly. Right? Okay. Yeah. It's like, yeah. Adaptation 101 for training. So yeah. So that's kind of the immune system's role in that. And so, you know, if you've done a really hard workout like that, if you've kind of pushed your limits, you should expect some heavier legs, some sore legs, a little bit of soreness. And that's inflammation that has signaled the immune system to come in and make you a better athlete, basically. And so, yeah. And so is that a good thing? Is that a bad thing?
Depends on what you do with it, right? And this is why we kind of say that, like, this is an area where, like, the kind of brain dead, like, motivational poster slogan that you hear from people who aren't serious athletes of, like, oh, just always push through the pain. It's like, no, if you went and did really good intervals or like a really hard race the day before, and then you just go through and push through the pain on that next ride when you really should be off the bike resting, like you're either going to do crappy work, additional damage, all of the above, other, you know.
Yeah. So if you've pushed your limits and you've signaled an adaptation, there's some things you want to do and there's some things you probably don't want to do. And one of the things that you don't want to do is blunt that adaptive signal. And the way you would blunt it, two really common ways are taking anti-inflammatory drugs. And the other one is ice.
This is why we talked about ice bath is not a thing that you're like, we did that whole, go listen to the inflammation episode. It's actually really interesting.
Yeah, like you would only really want to use ice and anti-inflammatories in kind of extreme cases. Because, like, if you do excessive damage, you know, like after you do like point to point, or after you do crusher, or, you know, or maybe, you know, maybe you just do too much and you do like a week's worth of damage.
Those things make you feel better.
Right. Yeah. Well, in those cases, you probably might want to consider ice or anti-inflammatories. But for normal training, you probably wouldn't, because it does tend to blunt the adaptive signals. The things you want to do is you want to do things that's going to help your body heal faster without blunting that signal. And, you know, we'll kind of talk about those things more in a second. But those are things like, obviously, sleep and eating and nutrition and, you know, those things are going to help your body recover quicker. Cause when you recover, you're going to adapt to it. But you don't want to blunt this. So I guess if the inflammation's acute and it's short term and it's occasional, it's a good thing. But if it's chronic and you're always in that state.
Have we hit all of our buckets yet?
I've got one more.
Okay. I'll save my question for the end then.
If it's acute and occasional and in response to like a breakthrough workout, that's a good thing. You know, like
my legs hurt today, probably because of this workout I did yesterday.
And in fact, that's good, right? When you're doing hard workouts, like I said, like you're probably not doing them right if you're not feeling it the next day.
Yeah.
You know, if your legs feel fine the next day, you probably didn't go hard enough. But if your legs are just constantly inflamed, if you just have constant inflammation, that might be the sixth cause of sore leg, and that's just overtraining.
Well, we say overtraining or really under-resting, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, I was going to ask, so my legs hurt all the time. Which bucket do I fall into? And it sounds like I'm probably falling into the
under-recovery bucket.
The under-recovery bucket of I'm riding for reasons that have nothing to do with me wanting to win races, and I'm not taking days off, and I actually, today is day two of not riding bikes. I've been finishing moving, and it's killing me.
And moving isn't recovery either.
No. So this is probably my issue, right?
Yeah. So you do, like I said, you do want sore legs occasionally, but if you attempt like too many breakthrough workouts too close together, or if you have like a tired body that you just keep pushing and pushing, or if you have your check engine light going off and you just put the electrical tape over it and you're just ignoring it constantly, this inflammation can become chronic. And when it becomes chronic like that, that inflammation, your body kind of just gives up. It's really not going to make you adapt and become faster because of it. And so that's not a good thing. That's why we preach rest days.
Dan and I prescribe rest weeks. We don't take.
Yeah.
But Dan and I are also slow. So that's the, you know, yeah.
Yeah. You know, if you want to become like me, just ignore your rest weeks, you know.
I'll throw out the Tour de France. You learn the longer you're in this, like maturing is realizing that the Tour de France is a recovery competition. Like it really is a contest to see like.
But interesting point though, is they're not doing the Tour de France to gain fitness.
Yeah, exactly.
And so they are taking ice baths between stages, you know,
okay,
they are,
yes, that's a good point.
Yeah. Right, they are taking anti-inflammatories between stages. Yeah. They're just trying to get through it.
Right.
They're not doing it so they can be faster for Tour of California later or whatever, you know,
depends on how bad their contract year is going, but no, yeah, to your point. Yeah. Like that's, I should say too, that like, I don't want to dissuade you. You know, I think some people kind of, there's like a false choice where you either have to be like super into this and like, you've got to know your GC position for the I Cup and you're going to do 8 races. It's like, I think doing what I'm doing is fine. You know, I'm not like sore enough that like, I can't walk up the stairs in the morning, but like, if your goal is to get fast, like the way Dan and I are doing it is kind of, you have to like, you do need to take your recovery seriously and not shortchange it and only take rest days when you're doing like moving or something.
And you might think that you've got sore legs all the time. And, you know, maybe sometimes it's because your glycogen levels are low and other times it's just because you've got some blood pooling in your legs and, you know, and you hop on the bike and 15 minutes later it gets recirculated throughout your body. And, but if you do kind of have chronic inflammation because of chronic under recovery and you're doing more work than you're able to handle and so forth, you know, that's something you probably do need to pay attention to. Occasionally your legs should feel good, and you should also, your training should also be making you faster.
Oof. No, I mean, it is just not very much. You know, like for the amount of time I'm throwing at this, I should probably be getting a better return.
You know, so if you do feel like you're dealing with some chronic inflammation in your legs, you might have to improve the quality of your rest or your nutrition, your sleep. There's something that might not be right, you know? So that could be a check engine light that's just been left on for too long that you're not doing anything about, you know,
it's not like bad.
You need to take it to AutoZone and have them plug that machine in. And
I actually had the guy plug the machine into my car. I don't remember why, cause I drive a Prius. I don't remember what was wrong with it.
Yeah.
That was
so
cool.
Yeah. So those are the, so, oh, what were you going to say? Sorry.
Something dumb that has nothing to do with this. So, this is interesting though. And it's funny cause like when you said we're going to do a topic on sore legs, I almost thought you were joking. Cause I was like, oh yeah, that's just a thing you deal with all the time. But I guess that's not ideal.
Yeah. So how do we deal with sore legs?
Hmm.
You know, that's why I thought it was interesting. We talked, there's like more than one reason our legs might not be feeling awesome. But let's talk about how we deal with it. So I guess the main question is like, how do we help the body recover faster without blunting the adaptation signals? And
go listen to the inflammation episode, right? We would have, I should say, just to throw out, we did a whole episode.
Yeah, we did a whole episode. Yeah. And like I say, we just need to give our body what it needs and it'll take care of the rest.
Yep.
And like we said earlier, those things are sleep, time.
Yeah.
You know, it just takes time.
There's no way to get around it.
Yeah, there's sometimes really no shortcuts. Nutrition, hydration, managing stress. Like if you're piling one kind of stress on another kind of stress, you're not going to heal and you're not going to get faster. So managing stress is super important. Another one is distributing our intensity properly. You know, like when you have a quality workout, you make it count and you make it so you're feeling it the next day. But then the other days you don't have a breakthrough workout every time you work out.
You're not doing hero attacks every zone two ride.
Yeah. So those are some things, but some other things that we can do is one is riding. Like I said earlier, you know, how riding is, it's how we prevent sore legs because, you know, if you're training enough, you're getting faster. And if you're getting stronger, you can not have sore legs at a relative effort, you know, but it's also can be the cause because if you're doing too much, you get sore, but it can also be the cure of sore legs because easy spins, it's actually like the athletes I work with, I like to really encourage easy spins, like 30 minute easy spins because they actually do a lot. I'm a big fan of them. So it's like an easy spin. And by easy spin, I'm talking about like a 30 minute, just moving
put
your
on
legs,
your helmet, your shoes and your street clothes. And
you're basically just helping your circulatory system function better. You're pumping that blood back up from your feet, back to your heart so it can get oxygenated and then out to your body again.
Pro riders are big on this.
You know, and that's delivering like a lot of what you need to heal faster, to recover faster. There's a lot of people that are time crunched that, you know, maybe you don't have 30 minutes to just go do an easy spin, but I'm a pretty big fan myself. It improves circulation. It helps get that blood pumped back through your body from your, that's been pulling in your feet. It also helps lymph circulation, which is basically kind of like our immune system's garbage removal service, you know, like it helps remove some of that, get it circulated and filtered out. It helps, you know, like lactate is consumed aerobically. And if there's excess lactate, not that that's bad in our system, it helps utilize that. It helps get rid of metabolic waste. You know, we did an episode about uric acid before. There's also like carbon.
You did an episode about uric acid?
Yeah. It's the reason, like the one that explains why I'm slow, remember? Like that's an example of metabolic waste that
we started this off. Intervals, recovery, 3 years later, uric acid, gambling addiction. stay tuned for next week's episode on the sinking of the Lusitania.
So like the easy spins, it just kind of helps pump all that stuff through your body and it just makes you feel better. Huge fan. So another thing that you can do like to help prevent sore legs is just become fitter.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You know, so you can do more with relatively less sore legs as your fitness improves. But Another one too that's kind of cool is massage and compression. Because the interesting thing about massage and compression is it's shown to enhance recovery and speed up the healing processes of your body without blunting any adaptive signals. And probably massage is probably one of the best things you can do to speed up recovery, but also compression. You know, we talked about like the Normatex earlier, and I don't know, I think most people probably know what Normatex are, but for those that don't,
the big goofy boots, all the pros do an Instagram story in.
Yeah. Yeah. They're these compression boots that you put on your legs. And what it does is it'll start squeezing at your feet, and then it'll like start to squeeze at your shins, or your calves, and then it'll start squeezing up higher, and then it'll squeeze at your quads. And really kind of what it's doing is helping your venous return defy gravity, I guess. It's kind of pushing it back upstream, you know, towards your heart. And you know, this kind of helps. It also helps, like, if you're dealing with any like swelling, or it reduces swelling. And
they're expensive. You should buy them. We're not in the pocket of big Normatec, don't worry. But you and I both agree that for as much as they help after a hard bike ride, after a hard day in the shop or teaching or work in retail or whatever, like, oh my gosh, it helps so much. Like when you have like sore work legs, it seems to work even better on sore work legs than it does on sore training legs.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan. Like it, like I found like when I used to ride with the Skyline guys, these rides felt like midweek races to me. And if I would use like the Normatex, like right before the ride, I could start out feeling so much better. Cause you're really supposed to, like, most people use them after rides, but I kind of found that like if I use them before a ride, it helps kind of pump some of that blood out of my feet, and I feel like I can start faster because I don't have as much blood pulling and so forth. And it's kind of interesting is you're wearing them, you can almost feel like your pulse pulsing everywhere throughout. Yeah. I'll feel like my pulse in my arms just like,
I mean, it's like you're wearing two giant blood pressure cuffs. Like, if you've ever felt compelled to stick your leg into the blood pressure thing at Walmart, it's like that, and it only costs $800.
Yeah. Not necessary, though, but cool. You know.
Can buy them used on eBay. That's what I did.
Did you?
I did, yeah.
Okay. They are cool, and they do feel good, and they probably help you recover. But other things you can do, too, is obviously the easy spin kind of does a similar thing, but just putting your legs up. And a lot of times, like, when riders have heavy legs, if you just go lay down on your back and put your legs up on the back of the couch or something and just kind of leave them up there. Let gravity do its thing. It feels really, really good. You can also use like foam rollers and so forth could help too. I mean, that's, I guess, how you could do massage. But yeah, those are just some things to do if, you know, if blood pulling in your legs is kind of the source of your sore legs. Compression booties or lifting up your feet or an easy spin are great ways to kind of help deal with that. So there's just some reasons that your legs could be feeling icky and sore. And like Joe said earlier, you know, just like you can really never tell how your ride's going to feel until you start riding sometimes.
This goes both ways. Because I've also had the roads where you get on and you're like, oh my gosh, I feel great. You know, I've got golden legs today. I'm dancing up the hill. And then 20 minutes later, you're like, wow, there's only two digits on the power number on my Wahoo right now. You know, like I said, my rule of thumb is if I have a thing I'm going to do that's hard, first off, it's okay to bail on stuff. If you can't do it well, you shouldn't do it.
Exactly.
I agree on that, right? But you might feel bad. Give it half an hour.
Yeah.
Even if you end up doing 75% or 50% of it because you don't have enough time, give it a sec. See how you feel. You might feel fine. Do a little test.
Like I did a Skyline ride yesterday because we climbed Francis Peak the day before. And then yesterday I went to my Skyline ride. And when I first started out, like riding zone 2 with Skyline just felt awful. Yeah. Like I was just kind of like pretending to enjoy it. But then after about 45 minutes, like I started feeling really good for some reason.
Like so. Said, some, and it's not even like, cause my usual rule of thumb is like, don't hit the gas until you've been going 15, 20 minutes. Make sure cause I always used to do the kid thing where you just go on and sprint cause you can do that. But even longer, like 15, 20 minutes isn't even enough. Sometimes like it takes half an hour, 45 minutes before it starts to click. And I'm like, okay, there it is.
Yeah. And on recovery days, you know, give the easy spin a shot. Keep it easy. You just have to move the muscles. You don't have to put any pressure on them. You don't have to strain them at all. They just need to be moving to pump all that.
We'll say it again. You can't do a recovery ride on quarry. Oh, like I said, I do it in street clothes. Just something psychologically, like do it and then, like, and then plan it. Do it.
I used to tell McCall to get in her car and drive down to Wasatch.
Yeah, because she lives up in the
Cove. She lives up in the Cove, yeah.
Drive down to Wasatch?
Yeah.
I don't know. Throw your bike on the trainer and don't even turn it on and just like scroll through TikTok for half an hour while you pedal in your street shoes. Like just move your legs, right?
And, you know, if your check engine light's been going off for a long time, you know, maybe do something about it. Just make sure that, you know, you're giving your body a chance to adapt to all this hard work you're doing. And sometimes your legs should feel good. Sometimes they should feel icky. There's different reasons for it.
All the usual clarity and precision that we get from the Vapor Cycling Podcast. I think it would be funny, but I'm too lazy to find, you know, like the little Ford jingle you get, like doo-doo-doo, like when your engine light goes on or when you open up the door too, the doo-doo-doo, like the Ford noise.
Does mine do that? I get into it like every day, and I don't know if it
makes and does a little. People, if you know what I'm talking about, that'll be, I don't know. Check engine light is our secret word.
Yeah,
I was gonna put that in, but I was like, nah, it sounds like work. That's our
check engine light.
Check engine light.
So I hope your legs are feeling good. Put your feet up. I actually try that. Like if you're not driving, like right now, go lay down. Yeah.
Don't put your feet up while you drive. Go look at if you want something gnarly, Google images, x-ray of people with feet on dash who got into car crashes, and don't do that in the car. That's your little fun, horrifying safety tip for the day.
Yeah. So if you're not driving, go try putting your feet up right now and let me know if it feels good.
Okay.
Okay.
Good stuff. Everybody ride safe. Hopefully we will return. Actually, I might do a solo episode.
Yeah, I'll be in Tahoe. So yeah, Joe's going to do a solo episode
out somehow. It'll be me and Franklin, my puppy. It'll be cute. He'll just poop on the mic and then eat it. that's where we're at with Franklin right now. Everybody ride safe. Good luck with the racing this weekend. Go put your legs up.